Welcome to Accessibility Craft, where we explore the complex challenges and emerging trends that are shaping digital accessibility while sipping on unique craft beverages. This show is proudly produced by Equalize Digital, the most trusted name in WordPress accessibility. Join us every week as we break down accessibility news and share the expert strategies we've used to help make millions of websites more accessible. Grab a drink. The show starts now.
I am very excited to introduce our speaker today, Bette Hannon. Bette Hannon, who has a CPAC, CPACC, is the CEO of Accessicart, which is a services agency that helps e-commerce brands remove barriers for customers with disabilities and meet web accessibility compliance requirements like the ADA and, yes, the EAA, or the European Accessibility Act, which she is going to speak about today. Accessicart specializes in testing, consulting, and reporting alongside existing website teams to level up skills and educate regarding compliance. When not working, Bette enjoys cooking Irish whiskey and hiking in snowshoeing near Bend, Oregon, where she lives. And also, it doesn't say this here, but Bette is on the board of the WP Accessibility Day conference with me, and she and I have been friends for quite a long time, and I'm just so happy to have her here to speak. So welcome, Bette.
Thanks. It's great to be here today. You're ready for me to share.
Yep. So a quick note while you are getting your sharing set up, I am going to continue working to make sure we can get our human-generated captions. So I will post about that. For everyone watching, please look for the Q&A module. We will come at the end and do questions and answers. So I'll let you take it away, Bette.
Awesome. Great. Thanks, Amber. It is good to be here with you all today, and people who follow me on social media will know that I have been nerding out over the last year or two around EAA kind of compliance pieces and learning about what's happening. Here's our kind of roadmap today, and I should first off say that we are not going to talk about any technical accessibility today. So if you're new to accessibility, you're looking for information about how to start implementing accessibility, you should go back through some of those previous meetup videos that Amber spoke about just a bit ago. But we'll start off today talking a little bit about what is the European Accessibility Act and the fact that it's not just one law. We'll talk about who has to comply. Spoiler alert, some US businesses will need to comply. Then we'll talk about what compliance looks like. So beyond those technical pieces, beyond making things accessible, what other kind of pieces are there? And then enforcement for EAA began last summer at the end of June. And so we're starting to see what some of that early enforcement looks like. And I think that's a really helpful kind of context for everyone to have, especially if you are needing to motivate clients or team members. And so we're going to talk, I'm going to spend actually a good chunk talking about what this enforcement is starting to look like and what we are seeing kind of out in the wild in terms of the enforcement. And then I'm absolutely planning on some time for Q&A at the end. And so while we'll be talking about laws and legal matters today, I want to say right up front, I'm not an attorney. You should seek out the advice of your own attorney, either as a site owner or as a freelancer or agency. You should be talking to your own attorneys if you have questions about your own legal compliance. And today I'm just simply going to be speaking out of my own experience with Accessicart and our clients, and then what I'm understanding from interacting with attorneys and companies and brands that are working on their compliance with EAA. So the European Accessibility Act is bringing some big changes for web accessibility all over the world. Like most other accessibility laws, this law is based in human rights laws. And so the aim is to give equal access to everyone, including people with disabilities, to digital services and products. EAA was actually first passed in 2019, and enforcement went into effect on June 28, 2025. And so what we call the European Accessibility Act is actually, in EU law, a directive. So directives set the scope and minimum thresholds for each EU member state And then each nation creates their own transposed law underneath that directive umbrella. So sometimes that's a little difficult for us Americans to wrap our heads around, but it means that Germany has their own law under EAA, and France has their own law, and Italy, every nation has their own separate law under EAA. So theoretically, EAA was intended to harmonize or bring together various accessibility requirements around digital accessibility, commerce, trade. And in the short term, every nation is just a little bit different with those requirements. And so we'll talk a little bit in a little bit about how multinational companies are starting to deal with these differences. But among other things, it means that every country has their own enforcement agency. So the English translation that often gets used is Market Surveillance Authority, which I think sounds like spycraft to American ears, but the enforcement agency or the oversight agency, Market Surveillance Authority, those are all the same thing. That agency is the one that receives the complaints, may proactively look for noncompliance, but also metes out kind of legal orders and enforces the EAA. And there are nationally, there's systems that are emerging of, legal orders and fines and penalties that are a part of this enforcement system. That's the big picture. So who has to comply? And the big picture is that any companies, any brands, anybody that sells products and services to EU citizens, no matter where those companies are located, must comply if they have a digital interface that's a part of that marketing, selling, or delivering those products or services. So this includes e-commerce sites explicitly, but it would also include things like scheduling pages or customer interface dashboards. And initially, we were hearing that more generic marketing sites might not fall into scope. But more recently, I'm hearing that brands and companies are telling us that their attorneys have advised them that even the marketing sites themselves, especially when they have information about products or things like newsletter signups, those must also be made compliant. So, like GDPR, this applies to US and other non-EU businesses. So, no matter where you are, if you're selling to EU citizens, then you have a compliance requirement. Now, there is an exclusion for micro enterprises. So, if the business does less than 2 million euros in annual revenue, and that's about 2.3 million US dollars this week, or they have less than 10 employees, then they're exempted, at least for the time being. And we, I think at some point, some of those thresholds may be reduced, but the bigger risk or the bigger thing to think about is that businesses often grow. So while a business may be exempt now, they may outgrow that exemption. And so as clients who are exempt now come up for a redesign or redevelopment project, it's really a good idea to include accessibility as a part of that for future proofing in case they outgrow this exemption. So there are lots and lots of requirements, pieces of the EAA that you may want to learn about. EAA covers a lot more than just websites. It includes things like hardware, electronic hardware, e-readers, mobile phones, public kiosks, a lot of travel-related things. Today, I'm really going to focus in and talk on the most relevant requirements for people creating and managing websites. So consumer-facing websites, especially e-commerce payments, anything that gives product or services information, must meet EN 301-549. That's the European norm for accessibility. Right now, that norm references WCAG, Website Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.1 AA. So right now, EN 301-549 has a few things, but it's essentially, we can think about it as equivalent with WCAG 2.1 AA. That process, though, EN 301-548 is in process of being updated. And the expectation is that it will shift to Site 2.2 AA sometime this coming summer. So I think for a lot of folks, when you're working with clients, you're going to want to be focusing on 2.2 as a way of kind of future-proofing it, because that requirement is really soon to change. Again, there are questions about internal requirements in terms of internal websites. EAA may cover some of those under different employment sections, but right now I'm focusing mostly today on the things that are more customer or consumer facing. EAA covers not just covers products and services that have any kind of digital or communications aspect. So, for example, if you have a product like a room humidifier, but it has a companion app, right? That app must be accessible. If you have information about that accessibility must be provided on the website pre-purchase. So, for example, let's think about a hosting company, right? A hosting company is selling hosting services to EU citizens. To be able to use those services, you have to be able to log in and use an online a dashboard that has all kinds of UI interface to it. So that dashboard has to be accessible, and you have to give information about its accessibility before the purchase. The same would hold true, for example, for an online course. You would have to show that you have some kind of way that people are going to be able to use this. And then you will also, it includes things like any documents. So, like, I think a lot of products have user manuals that are PDFs, that they've just always been PDFs. Those PDFs must also be accessible. And we all, I think most folks here today understand that PDF accessibility is its own unique specialty and cause for issues as well. So, additionally, sites must include accessibility statements. For most countries, or a lot of them anyway, they must contain specific information on how the users or the consumer can report an issue, an accessibility barrier to the company. So it has to, they have to have a way, a mechanism, an email address, something for the consumer to report an issue. And then, if it's not resolved, which oversight authority? So, what's the next step? If you don't feel like we've resolved your issue, then you need to contact this particular oversight authority. Be aware that in some countries, like France, Germany, Poland, others, they require detailing the remaining unremediated accessibility issues that are on the site. So you have to have a detailed list of the issues that have been identified and remain on your website unremediated. And in France, that list must also include sort of expected remediation date or the plan for fixing those issues. So you're it's not, the expectation is those won't be there forever, but you got a date, you're committing to moving this forward.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
It's worth noting that this is a highly problematic conflict for US-based businesses. US-based businesses would never outline remaining accessibility issues on their website because this could so easily be abused by the serial plaintiff law firms. So this is a situation where the company would definitely want to consult their own attorney about that particular situation. So for, maybe they will figure out how much of their revenue is coming from Europe versus the US, or maybe they will figure out they need to have a separate website for EU versus US. Figuring out what you're going to do, what has to be in the accessibility statement based on the countries where you're doing business. And then in some countries, the date that the accessibility statement was last changed is required. So there's an expectation that that accessibility statement is going to be and going to need to be regularly updated. So, a not very well-known requirement of EAA is that businesses should be self-reporting the remaining issues on their websites, and not just the websites, but their other digital assets like apps and documents to the Market Surveillance or Oversight Authority. This is a part of the directive, the EAA umbrella directive. It looks like not every country implemented that particular requirement in their transposed law. And we assume that this will catch up over the next couple of years, that the ones that somehow overlook that will come back. But we do know, for example, that the Netherlands has a specific form for making that report. Germany, Spain, and other countries that require this reporting have not yet indicated how the self-report should be made. So that's pretty much just through their normal communication channels, but you're supposed to be reporting the unremediated issues on your website. It's important to understand that this self-reporting is not a one-and-done report. And the Netherlands, in particular, expects that in their law, that if you find a critical or serious issue on your site, that it will be reported to them within 1 week. Other severity levels must be reported within 30 days. But items that are fixed within that time frame don't have to be reported. So if you find a critical issue, but you fix it within a week, then it doesn't have to be reported. And I think it's fascinating to think about the carrot and stick that have been used here, right? What they are clearly hoping is that website teams that find an issue or when an issue is reported to them, they will say to themselves, oh, or some other expletive, we don't want to have to report that and do all that paperwork. Let us just fix that. Which should go a long way, we think, to preventing accessibility issues from stacking up in the backlog queue, as they frequently do currently. So they're really hoping that that it will change the way that accessibility issues are approached, that it will be much more quickly remediated when they're discovered. Note that if you neglect or avoid the self-reporting, and later on, an issue is escalated, reported to you, and comes to the oversight authority. Now you have two legal violations. Your website's not accessible under EAA, under the EAA law there, and you failed to do the required self-reporting. So two violations there. And while it's not explicitly a part of the law that regular testing be happening, it is a strongly implied assumption that there will be regular testing, both automated and manual testing of the website. Some countries require for their government and public sector sites the date of the last accessibility audit be published on the in the accessibility statement. And there's, I think, some conversation around the edges about whether that may become a requirement for e-commerce and other EA sites in scope of EAA as well. But there's a kind of a sense that you should be doing regular testing. It's not a legal requirement, but it's kind of required to be able to do all of the rest of these things. So, under that EAA directive, every nation has their own law. And there are differences between those laws in some of the requirements. For instance, how long do you have to reply to a consumer complaint? In some some countries that's less than 2 weeks. In other countries, it's 3 weeks or almost 30 days in some cases. What needs to go into your accessibility statement? That differs by nation. So if you sell into multiple nations, if you have customers in multiple nations, which laws do you follow? This is absolutely something that companies should consult their attorneys about. But the companies that we're talking to seem to be getting either the advice that they should choose the nation where they have the largest revenue or the largest, biggest customer footprint, or that they should sort through these and figure out which of the, kind of a hodgepodge of choose the strictest rules, no matter which countries those come from, so that you will be sure you're complying with the rest. And I'm sure that people are pushing back on some of that, but it is a kind of a question, a big question about how multinational companies are going to deal with all of this. So, what is in for there? And I'm sure there are some other things about compliance that those I think I've covered most of the bigger pieces of that compliance. There are a lot of little things, but I think it can be helpful to move on to look at what does enforcement look like. And it's important to understand that that's still unfolding. The official enforcement just started at the end of June last summer. And we're going to talk about some more specifics in a moment. But what I want to describe is the general pattern of what we're seeing so far in terms of getting an enforcement action started. It's important to know that that enforcement action starting can come from a variety of places. So every nation allows for individual consumers or users to report barriers, and nations allow for them, and all of them allow for advocacy groups for consumers or persons with disabilities to report barriers. So it can come from either of those. Then the oversight authority can take their own proactive accessibility testing and auditing. They're not just relying on consumers or advocacy groups to make complaints. But then in Germany, also allows for your competitors to file a complaint. And their rationale is that this levels the playing field because it's not fair for one competitor to invest in making things accessible and the other to profit by avoiding the law. So complaints can be filed. So complaints can be filed from all these different places. The enforcement action can start from all these different places. Every country has a little bit different deadlines for making reply to the complainant. So, for instance, in France, they must acknowledge receipt of the complaint within 10 days and then provide a substantive response or a plan for remediation within 30 days. And that's going to be different country to country, but you get there's some kind of a deadline window there. If the issue is not replied to or resolved within that window, that legal window, then the complaint can be escalated to the Market Surveillance or Oversight Authority. Or the complainant can choose to escalate directly into the court system. And this has happened in France. I'll talk about that in just a bit. And then again, the oversight authority can initiate their own auditing. So things can start at that level, but things kind of come to the oversight authorities. If they don't come to go directly to court, they can go to the oversight authorities. When the oversight authority gets involved, it seems mostly that they are not jumping directly to penalties. What they are doing is giving an initial legal order to make it accessible by a specific date. So the complaint gets escalated, they do their due diligence looking at what's the evidence there, they say make it accessible, make it conform to EN 301-549 by X date. Some of the attorneys that I've talked to think that this is an early transition period, and that especially if companies seem to be trying to skirt the compliance, that this initial grace period to comply may go away. Ultimately, what they want is for people to make things accessible. But there, it may be that this kind of early, we're not going to give you a penalty at first, we're giving you this window to make it accessible, that may go away or certainly get shorter. And what we don't know yet is how, realistic those windows will be, right? So will they, for instance, require conformance from a large e-commerce site within 30 days, which is probably not logistically feasible. The windows will, almost certainly be much shorter than the site owner or the company would really like, right? And that short window is going to make it more expensive, because they'll have to pay more to get the work done in a short window, and they'll have to put aside any other priorities while they're scrambling to get this remediation done. So, like most of us always tell prospective clients, right, the most cost-effective way to meet compliance is going to be to start early on your own timeline before you're forced to do so. But we have this kind of window, right? And so what happens if they don't get the site or the app or the document into conformance by the deadline? Well, this varies quite a bit depending on the country and their specific laws, but here are some of the highlights. It seems like in most countries, what we're seeing so far are daily fines for missing the deadline. They start at, and they're starting at around 1,000 euros a day, but can kick up and much higher. And we'll talk about a case where it was much higher in just a bit. If that doesn't motivate compliance, then there are other penalties that can kick in. A lot of these start at around that are more kind of one-time bigger penalties. They start at around 60,000 euros. In Italy, however, the fines can be as much as 5% of the previous year's gross global annual revenue. So that's a way of trying to level the playing field between bigger companies and smaller companies. But that could be a big chunk of fine if that has to happen. In Ireland, the CEO of the company can receive up to 18 months of jail time. And now, to get jail time, the company has to essentially refuse to implement accessibility, but it does give you a sense for how seriously some nations are taking some of this. And ultimately, the biggest piece is that countries can revoke your right to sell into their country, to sell products and services to EU citizens, and then to be allowed to sell to them again. The assumption would be that you would not only have to show that you had made everything accessible, but that you have plans for maintaining that accessibility as well. So it could get kind of painful, I think, if you don't comply. So let's talk about what we're actually seeing in terms of enforcement. So that's sort of the big picture of sort of what what's going on. But let's talk about some specific cases now. There are consumer complaints happening, but since they don't tend to be public, we don't get to see them, or we don't hear about them. Oversight authorities are reporting that complaints are happening and that they are processing them. That's how we know that complaints are happening. In France, near the end of last summer, two advocacy groups on behalf of persons who are blind partnered together with a third organization that's a human rights legal organization, and they filed complaints with four major grocery store chains over their websites and apps. When they did so, they filed very public press releases that included specific examples of barriers that were found, with quotes from blind consumers about how difficult it was to shop online or use the apps and use the websites. As you might imagine, the potential for this happening is a huge negative hit for reputations of the brand. And the takeaway is that brands and site owners should not assume that complaints will be private. And there's nothing to stop a consumer from also announcing that they filed a complaint with a company. So, you might assume, if you're the business owner, that things could get public really quickly. And you would think that that would motivate businesses to get their acts together, right? But no, These grocers, these four grocery chains, have mostly ignored the complaints so far. In fact, the groups, the advocacy groups, reported that they have responded with a distinct indifference. Among other things, one of the grocery store chains said, "Yeah, we'll take accessibility into consideration when we next redevelop our website in late 2026." It's like, wow. And in the fall, then these advocacy groups escalated the issue by filing in court asking for what's called a summary injunction. So basically, they came, they brought their evidence to the court. They said, here's the evidence, here's the law under the French transposition of EAA. Just tell those grocers to make it accessible. The court could order them, a court ordered date to make it accessible. There have been multiple court dates for this proceeding, this injunction proceeding, that keep getting postponed. And it's not entirely clear why that is happening, but we continue to watch this case. I think the big picture takeaway is public complaints about how your brand is excluding people with disabilities are probably not going to be great for your brand. In Sweden, they announced in November that their oversight authority has started proactive accessibility auditing of large e-commerce sites. They announced that in this first round, so that implies there will be future rounds, more rounds of auditing, that they would be focusing on the home page, a product page, and the search function. So we're monitoring some of these enforcement actions, I think, as we're thinking about them, there it's easy to kind of take them, getting them isolated. And so I thought it might be helpful to look at a few countries, just by country, to kind of think about more about how enforcement might continue to unfold. So let's talk about the Netherlands. I'm a little nervous because Rian's here, and maybe she'll help me flesh this out later. But as I mentioned before, the Oversight Authority in the Netherlands has a specific self-reporting form on their website. Barriers at this critical or serious level have to be reported within a week. Other severity levels reported within 30 days. Some companies have already gotten letters informing them of remediation deadlines. And we assume these are most likely originated with consumer complaints. So we know that the authority has given letters informing companies you must make your site accessible by this date. The agency announced in February, so just a few weeks ago, that companies who are either missing or who have weak self-reporting would be prioritized for auditing by the oversight agency. So, if you thought that sort of like ignoring that self-reporting would let you fly under the radar, that is not going to happen. Or if you thought doing a little performative bit of self-reporting would get you out of the crosshairs, that's not happening. So then they also announced that they expect to begin a full-scale auditing program by sometime in April or May of this, so coming up soon, this month or next. So gives you an idea of how things are beginning to move along in the Netherlands. Now, not every country created a new oversight authority. Some countries folded these new responsibilities, these new law enforcement responsibilities into existing agencies. So Ireland is one. They assigned responsibility for EAA to their Commission for Consumer Regulation, or ComReg. And this agency reported at the February IAAP, International Association of Accessibility Professionals Conference in Dublin, that they are already in the process of processing consumer complaints. But I think one of the most interesting pieces of information that they shared was that their EAA division is partnering closely with the consumer care division, because what they discovered was that a lot of times consumers did not know the law ex about accessibility, didn't reference accessibility, but what they were reporting was an accessibility problem. It turned out what they the problem they had was really related to the accessibility of something. And so when the consumer reports a problem that turns out to be accessibility, they are proactively triggering EAA enforcement proceedings as a part of that. And so again, if folks thought they were I think that's a really interesting way to begin to see how some countries are really taking this quite seriously in terms of moving forward with accessibility EAA enforcement. Here's an interesting one. So Norway is not a member of the EU, but they are part of the European Economic Area. And so because of that, they do implement or enact a lot of EU laws. And so they have a accessibility law that essentially under EAA, that Norwegian Oversight Authority late last summer audited a health platform called Helsami. And they originally found 119 accessibility violations, and they gave them about 4 months to get it remediated. So the deadline for that was on August 8. On August 8, 64 violations remain unfixed. So the directorate notified the health platform that they had until December 19. They had 11 days further to meet those accessibility guidelines, or that missing that deadline would start daily fines of 50,000 Norwegian kroners. That's a little over $5,000 a day. And so they eventually got the site into conformance, or the platform into conformance, by December 23. So this is an example that shows that when these oversight agencies are giving a legal order to remediate on a deadline as that first action, when that remediation is not completed, not taken seriously, at least some of these agencies will not be shy about imposing fines. And so I think the takeaway is if you get a legal order to, get things remediated, it should be taken as a serious deadline, or things could get expensive for you. And here are just a few more. Just for context, these four countries, Poland, Romania, Hungary, the Czech Republic, I think it's fair to say they are not generally known as huge fans of EU regulation. They kind of not super excited about a lot of the regulation that comes out of the EU. But even for countries that are not big on EU rules, Poland and Romania are requiring self-reporting right out of the gate. Plus, that plans for remediation have to be a part of that reporting. So not only do you have to self-report the issues that remain unremediated, you have to include what's your plan for fixing that. In Hungary, the accessibility statement, so that the Poland and Romania is about self-reporting. In Hungary, the accessibility statement must include details of the remaining issues and plans for remediation. And then in the Czech Republic, I find this really interesting because I've not seen it in any other country so far. The Czech Republic, the Oversight Authority announced that they plan to publish a list of non-compliant, inaccessible products and services on their website. Now, there is some pushback from businesses in the EU over within them about over-regulation. There's a kind of one of the attorneys I talked to talked about regulation fatigue, right? There is some pushback, in particular around things around privacy and accessibility. But I think the general consensus among folks who work in accessibility in the EU is that enforcement and plans for future enforcement are clearly robust at the moment. At the IAAP big meeting in Dublin in February, it was announced that the Article 28 working group is up and running. Now, Article 28 of the EAA is the article that focuses on transitions and implementations. And this working group has representatives from all the member nation oversight authorities, as well as persons with disabilities and some other stakeholders. And this group is tasked with working together to do some coordination, some harmonization, some cooperation across national borders. But one of the really big announcements was that this from this group was that they are information sharing with one another about companies with violations or who are the subject of enforcement actions. So companies should not assume that if they receive an enforcement action, say in France, that it will stay only within France. They should assume that there may be parallel enforcement actions or other enforcement actions for other countries where they do business when information sharing is happening between those enforcement agencies. And I think that represents a huge push for the way that this will be a very robust enforcement around these. And I want to have some, here are just some thoughts that you may want to take into consideration beyond technical implementation. So absolutely work on the technical accessibility, but some other things that need to be in process with companies that are there. And that is figure out your process for a complaint early. So some national laws, say France, only leave you 10 days to reply when there's a consumer complaint. Some only give you 30 days, you know, France again gives you like 30 days to get either get it resolved or have a substantive resolute, you know, way that it's going to get resolved. You do not want to waste time when you get a consumer complaint trying to figure out what your process needs to be, who's going to reply, which, you know, do you need to talk to an attorney, which attorney, do you need to get an attorney, all of those pieces. You don't want to be scrambling at the last minute when a complaint comes in, because eventually a complaint will come, right? We know that no site is 100% accessible. So you're going to get a complaint. Figure out what that process is going to be so that you can minimize the headache that it will be in a larger way. Then you need to get your support team trained with this process. Whoever will be receiving these complaints, you know, in your accessibility statement, you're going to tell people what they need to do to file a complaint. You know, is it that it needs to be through a specific email address, for instance? But whoever's going to be receiving these, and your support team needs to know how those are going to get filed. Does the person need to specifically file through a specific email address? They should be ready to give that email address. What information might they need to collect to move forward? Should they be the ones that are collecting that? Should they be helping the customer initiate that? Don't let it fall off the radar because the support folks don't know what's supposed to happen in terms of this process. And then you're also going to want to train your support folks to be alert for any customer complaints or feedback that could be accessibility related, kind of like that Irish authority, because just because the consumer did not lead off with a reference to EAA, does not mean that the complaint can't be escalated later. If it's an accessibility issue their complaint is not getting addressed, it can be escalated to the oversight authority later. So you want to be proactive about being alert to things that could be accessibility issues. The big piece is just start documenting everything. And in reality, this is good advice for U.S. businesses relative to ADA lawsuits too. If you get a complaint in the EU under the EAA, if you get a complaint, you need to be able to demonstrate, to show to the oversight authority that you have not been ignoring or skirting the law. You need to be able to show that you've been making good faith efforts, even if you're not totally there yet, whatever totally there yet means, right? It's all, accessibility is always something that has to be maintained, but you need to be able to show that you have been working at this, making good faith efforts. Additionally, when there is a complaint, you need to know that the company will be asked for all of the interactions around the complaint by the oversight authority. So that the interactions that happened with that consumer, the back and forth, the emails or what, notes of the phone call, whatever that is, but also the interactions internally. So you need to have a process for documenting these complaints because you're going to have to share that documentation. And you need to clue your staff into the fact that the oversight authority will be reading all of this, right? So you don't want to have someone on your team, you know, spout off in a, you know, moment of frustration, you know, why do blind people even need to buy our products or something? That would not be a great look at all. So, you know, make sure everybody understands these are going to be reviewed and we want to be sure that we're sticking, not opening up more cans of worms, but also, that we're taking this seriously. So you want to start documenting in a safe place. And it's easier to pull all this documentation together if you're just regularly doing it. You make a habit of doing it. And rather than scrambling at the last minute trying to pull all of this together from all these other, all the places where it has happened over time. So you want to start pulling together in a safe place, a special folder on Google Drive or OneDrive or whatever that is. Any audits that you've had done. And ideally, the whole picture of all the audits you've done, even way before, any automated testing reports that you might get, your self-reported issues. When you self-report issues to the authority, you want to keep copies of that. If you're emailing it in on their contact form, because that's how they're telling you to do it at the moment, be sure you're keeping copies of that. Any issue or remediation logs, especially dates and who fixed what, and kind of like showing progress that issues are being tracked. Our new issues are being found and issues are being remediated. When you think about that accessibility statement and the fact that you're finding a new issue, so you're putting that into your accessibility statement with a date it's going to be, maybe with a plan for when it's going to be remediated. And then you get it remediated, you come back, you take that off. So you need to have versioning of your accessibility statement because that may become an issue that you need to show the accessibility statement that was on your site as of a certain date. If you hire outside vendors, you need to keep all of their reports and documentation to you, any advice that they're giving you, all of that piece, and any training that you've gotten for anybody on your team, whether those are developers or designers or content managers or support folks, keeping track of all of the training that you've gotten for your folks. So some of that sort of documentation is the kind of thing that AccessiCart provides in our plans. There are going to be other people that are providing some of that too. You can do, it's not super onerous, but people can do this on their own. It's a DIY thing, but it can be kind of a pain that somebody may want to outsource. So I suspect there will be other people that are providing that sort of documentation as a part of what they're doing. And then also there are company like another thing that we're doing is doing some consulting to help them figure out the processes, figure out who needs to get trained, pointing them toward resources, building prioritized plans. And there will be other companies that are coming along to do that if not already. I think it's just helpful to know sometimes companies are feeling like it's a lot and they're overwhelmed and they don't know and they can't figure out even where to start. And I think it's helpful to know that there are people that can help them, like a lot of folks in this meetup, probably to help kind of move folks along. So I always like to point out, at some point in a presentation, that accessibility is just always the right thing to do. It is being a good human to include people with disabilities, to not exclude them, even by just our ignorance. But it's also the law, and it makes good business sense too, improving your user experience and your SEO. And we're going to have some time for questions, a little bit of questions, I hope. If someone would rather have a more confidential chat about accessibility, including folks who need referrals to attorneys in the EU that are have experience with EAA or getting experience with EAA, don't hesitate to reach out. So, hope this has been helpful today, and I'm looking forward to your questions. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, Bet. I love, talking about, obviously it's always interesting to hear the scary stuff, but I love all the actionable tips that you presented there, especially around documenting things. It's interesting. I never thought about version controlling your accessibility statement. And I'm curious. So in my head, when you said that, I was like, that makes total sense because it is legally required. It's in Europe. In the US, it's like a nice thing, right? But it's interesting. So then in my head, I was like, okay, what are the best ways to do that? I'm like, well, you could have it sync with like a Git repo, or you could just go to the Wayback Machine and be like, take a screenshot of my page before you change it, like every time. So you have it like in a third part. I don't know. Like, do you have thoughts
Well,
on that? How would you version control that?
there's not a require I think in some places there are, there's a sense in which you should put the date that it was last revised. You don't have to, I think in a lot of places that's not required, but I think it makes sense to do it in terms of your own kind of trying to figure out your versioning and, all of that. Yeah.
Well, WordPress does have the whole last updated date, which you can output, but the slight downside on that is if you were just like, oh, I need to add a comma, it would change the updated date. Like anytime you save the post would do it, and which might not actually be the same as changing the actual context of the accessibility statement. So folks, if
Awesome.
you have any questions and you want to put them in the Q&A, I am going to pass them along to Bet. It did look like Sharon asked a question, which is, what is the legal culture around lawsuits in Europe? Is it as predatorial as the US?
Now, my sense is no. It's more, and I mean, there are law. I mean, as the French example shows, there are some lawsuits, but it's not nearly the same sort of litigious, anybody can sue you kind of thing, right? It tends to be kind of more of a, yeah. I don't know how that's all gonna shake out, but I thought it was really interesting. The French folks going straight to the court. Now there are provisions in some of these laws to get damages. So they could have put in the French groups could have put in it could have started a court proceeding in a way that would have led to some kind of damages payout for blind consumers, their blind members, right? But they didn't. This is more just like a public benefit. We want the court to tell them to make it right. And so just some interesting differences there, but
Yeah, I'll post a link to you if folks find it helpful. We have a blog post that I did a ton of research, which required translating a lot of documents into English from wherever they were originally in. And I was specifically looking into that, trying to figure out, do many of these country laws under the EAA allow for civil damages? And for the most part, it didn't, like, there were very few that explicitly
very few.
say that's what it is. I think Germany was one of the ones. And I think I've heard that Germany also has more on like the privacy side where they allow that as well.
Yes. Yes. Germany and France, I think. But yeah.
So I feel like there won't probably be, and there hasn't historically been the same kind of, we can make money off this, like we see here in the United States.
And I think really there's a different kind of these oversight authorities kind of have the legal role of giving these le they're basically giving a legal order in a different agency if there are some enforcement agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency here in the United States used to do that sort of thing. It can issue fines. But I don't know if there's the same kind of pushback for those where companies would, take them to court to get that overturned or something like that. And some of it is just we'll have to wait and see how all of this is kind of unfolding. But yeah.
Yeah, because even though the official enforcement will start was June of last year, it's not like a light switch on
No,
that. It's
it
been
takes a
rolling
while
out.
for things. Yeah. Well, and yeah, some nations clearly had been working on getting their enforcement agency, responsibilities kind of worked out. Clearly, the Netherlands is w way out ahead of some co other countries. It's still like, they barely got their transposed law done at the end of 2024, right? So it's kind of like taking a while for some other countries still.
Yeah, Lucas posted in the chat. He said, I did file a complaint against a German airline last year, and the options for compensation was not a thing. It's more about force the company to comply with the law.
Yeah, that's my impression is that it's more
Yeah.
focused on
The
that.
other thing I've seen, and this was actually quite a while ago, like a number of years ago, because there have been, for some transportation things, there have been more requirements around accessibility for quite a long time. And I remember seeing something related to an airline in Europe where it wasn't necessarily just a fine, but they also lost like government
Yes, it
subsidies
was in
and tax
Spain.
breaks. And that in and of itself could be even more expensive than the fine.
Oh, absolutely. And so I think, yes, over the last bit, there's a focus on travel. So a lot of EAA is like kiosks for travel, checking in, buying tickets, those kinds of things. So we're seeing there was a lot of focus on that. What I'm hearing from some of the enforcement agencies and from some of the attorneys is that they are there's a kind of a focus on, and in some of those agencies, the enforcement agencies are focusing on e-commerce because of what's that's a big piece of the digital law. And then we see that a lot of some of them are beginning to think about banking and finance. So that's another place, banking and finance. But you know, in Sweden, you get the health platform, so health related stuff. And, you know, accessibility touches all of these things, right? All of those things have real life impacts for people with disabilities, and we want to make sure that they're able to do the things they need to do with all of those platforms.
I'm glad they're including e-commerce now because honestly, if I were to admit how frequently I buy a product online, it might be almost daily, which is horrible for the planet, I'm sure. But it is
Well,
like so common, and I'm just like, I couldn't imagine not having the ability to do that, you know, when you've got kids and a job and like whatever other things make it difficult to get to a store, like everyone should be able to do that same thing.
absolutely. Well, and do your banking
Vanessa
and do all
had,
those other things. Yeah, go ahead. Another
yep.
question.
Vanessa had a question. She said, I'm curious about the Netherlands and their agency that will begin the full-scale auditing soon. How will they do this? Using an automated scanner that only catches 30% of the issues, or are they hiring staff for manual auditing for millions of websites? Have you read anything about what their approach is going to be?
No, I have not.
Perhaps Rianne could
No,
write in the chat if she
no.
has
Yeah,
also.
Rhea may have more information, but I don't know much other than that they were planning to do that. But I do know that some agencies that have started their proactive testing are they're not relying just on automated testing. They have some folks that are doing auditing for some manual testing.
Yeah, I did see Rion put a note that she hasn't heard. And for folks who don't know Rion is in the Netherlands and is a amazing accessibility specialist in that country and Europe and all around the world. So she is a great person to follow as well on European Accessibility Act things.
Absolutely.
Of course, I have not read anything about how their plan is, but my guess would be they're going to start with automated testing because it's really easy. Especially nowadays, to like create a crawler. I mean, a great example of this is the WebAIM Million, which is literally a crawler that, like, they don't manually go test a million home pages for accessibility.
No.
They have built something that goes out, fetches the URL, scans it with their WAVE rules, and then puts the report in a database. And I can
So,
only assume that's how countries are going to handle at least
well, they
assuming.
will start there, but you know, the EAA is very clear that automated testing, automated, you know, overlays that rely on that sort of automation under the hood, you know, that is not enough to get compliance. And so I am assuming that they will start with some automated, but you know, very quickly it will escalate. And you know, it doesn't take much to they run the automated, and then when they start to tell people you got problems, you better fix all these, that I think it would be irresponsible for the company to assume that only fix the things that can be found by automated testing. I think it's going to very quickly escalate to doing more manual testing. But it is a really interesting question as to, you know, will these oversight bodies, I do know that, you know, some of them have are hiring folks, but how, you know, how big will that get? What kind of enforcement is there? And what kind of
So
funding do they get for that?
I have experience in the US with we we've worked a couple times with higher ed institutions that were doing mandated remediation because they got in trouble with the Office of Civil Rights, which used to be part of the Department of Education here. And the thing that I always thought was really interesting, because we would get on calls with, they were actually attorneys who work at the Office of Civil Rights. So they're government employees that have a law degree and are licensed attorneys. And they had been trained on how to use like NVDA. And they were actually manually reviewing websites. But their volume at which they were doing it, I don't like, they weren't going out and crawling. It was more when they would get a complaint. So a student would say, something's wrong with this, my college won't fix it or whatever, and file it with the Office of Civil Rights. But then they would take this small complaint and they would go like, okay, now we're going to do an audit of your website. And so they would do the audit of the website and be like, these are all the things that we found that you have to fix. And it definitely went way beyond
Oh
automated issues.
yeah, for sure. So, yes, somebody just posted higher ed courses taking content down, and I think that happens, and that may happen for e-commerce sites too when they're dealing with stuff, right? Could just take things down, but I think the assumption needs to be that you need to think about, move through, use that automated testing, get the low-hanging fruit that the automated testing is going to identify for you, and then move on to getting other things going too, if you're going to DIY that. But even some very light manual auditing would not be a bad idea, right? If you need to know if you have navigation issue, keyboard navigation issues, or screen reader issues on things, that's important to kind of find those early. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I can imagine that also doing user testing is really beneficial. I mean, any business that wants to make money off their website, like the thing that's neat about user testing is you'll get accessibility feedback, but you sometimes also just get
General
general
UI improvement.
usability feedback. Because when you're working on a website every day, you're like, I understand how it's architected and I understand how the navigation menu works and I know where to go to find all the things. But then if you get someone who's never seen or been on a website before, they might give you some really beneficial feedback that could
Oh,
help you with your
absolutely.
conversion rate, some of which is accessibility and some of which is just you're naming your products wrong.
Yeah,
So.
or you've made this convoluted, this process kind of not so intuitive, right? Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Any other
Well,
questions that you?
I have not seen any more questions. So can you give a quick shout out on where people can find you if they want to follow up?
Awesome. Yeah. Accessicart.com is our website, and there's a contact form there. You can email me at bet@accessicart.com, and I'm on LinkedIn. Those are the best places to find me. So. I kind of pulled
Great.
back
Well,
on some of the other social media.
it's a lot to have to manage, so I totally understand. But thank you
Thanks.
again so
Thanks.
much, Bet. It's always a pleasure. And I love how I learned something at every one of these meetups. So I really appreciate you
For sure.
coming and sharing all the effort that you put into deep diving into how this law and regulations are being enforced.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone. And we'll be back in 2 weeks on a Tuesday. So tune in then for training your support staff on accessibility.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you found this episode valuable, please help us reach more people by subscribing, reviewing or liking the show, and sharing this with your colleagues. Accessibility Craft is a production of Equalize Digital Inc. Steve Jones composed our theme music. To learn how Equalize Digital can support you on your accessibility journey, visit us at equalizedigital.com.